Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the latest edition of Replay, the podcast devoted to women's college basketball, focusing on distinguishable games and wins over the last 24 to 48 hours. I'm your host, Coach Bill, coming to you live from the Big Apple, New York, on this Friday, February 3rd, as we continue to roll now into February and also into 2017, and we roll through the women's college basketball season that just continues to be stimulating day in and day out across the country. And last night was no different, as we had a couple of distinguishable wins. The first one in the top 25, you had NC State going on the road and beating Louisville. So that's certainly a seismic win for NC State, who's had a couple this year. Remember, they upset Notre Dame. They took down Florida State, which only UConn had done previously. And now they go on the road and beat Louisville. So that so Wes Moore certainly getting it done with NC State this year. It struggled a little bit within the last month, but again, three really huge wins for the Wolfpack this year. So that was certainly a distinguishable win. And then we also have to speak about the win of today's guest, who is Jeff Tungate, the head coach at the University of Oakland in the Horizon League. And they had a huge win when you really look at it over Green Bay, the number 21 ranked team in the country, in this week's polls, and also the number one mid-major in the ESPN poll, and just a team who has dominated the Horizon, but that has been upset by Coach Tungate and Oakland in recent matchups for sure. But that is certainly a huge win for the Oakland program and within the mid-major scope and the top 25 scope, really, and especially when you look what Green Bay has done this year, which we'll get into. Certainly, but a huge win for Coach Tungate and the Oakland women's basketball program, and I'll be excited to talk to him and break it down for sure. And then we only have the one guest today, and then we'll look to do a little recap of some of the other games that went on across the country. But with no further delay, let's go out to Michigan, and let's bring in Jeff Tungate. Jeff, are you there?
Coach, I'm here. How you doing?
I'm doing real well, Jeff. Thank you, and you must be doing pretty damn good yourself after last night's big win.
Well, obviously it was a huge win and really good for our program, and it was one that we really needed. We haven't played well with the last two or three weeks, and that was one that hopefully will propel us moving forward in league play. But, you know, we've got great respect for Green Bay, and Coach Borsteth is obviously one of the best coaches in the country, and to beat a team like that after what they did to us at their place was, you know, hopefully it'll give us the confidence we need to move forward.
Yeah, that's what you just touched on is a good little segue to me kind of prepping the audience before we get dive into last night's game and break it down. But you alluded to it. You on January 13th earlier this season, you guys at their place had lost 89-47. So certainly that was that was a tough one across the board that night, and they really handled you guys that night. But to come back and have the performance you had last night and to play them toe-to-toe was, and I got obviously a chance to watch it. It was just a terrific game to watch. But I got to give the audience just a couple of numbers so they can really dive into this. You guys are You know, in previous matchups, you guys are not certainly far into beating Green Bay. You're probably really one of the only teams to do it on the mid-major scope. But four out of the last six matchups now, you've beaten them, including you swept them last year. So certainly it's not like you or your program would come in, you know, with a fear factor of playing such a successful program or not having the belief that you could get it done, even despite the earlier matchup.
Yeah, you know, I think Green Bay now in the last 3 years is 41-4 in our league, if I'm not mistaken, and all four losses are to us. So, you know, I think where we're fortunate is the fact that we just joined the Horizon League 4 years ago. So coming in, I think we were just a little naive to the fact that you're supposed to lose to Green Bay every time. So I think that definitely helped us, you know, with our program and just being so new to the league and our kids just didn't know any better. So I think that was definitely a plus. But, you know, basketball, as you know, is a game of matchups. And for whatever reason, we match up real well with Green Bay. And it's just one of those games we match up well. And I knew at their place was going to be a tough one after sweeping them last year. And they were playing really good basketball. And going into that game, we came off a really good two-point win on the road against Milwaukee. And then to turn around 2 days later and play them, I knew it was going to be tough. And they played extremely well, and give them all the credit in the world. But you know, I got to give our kids a lot of credit for bouncing back, putting that out of their minds, and moving forward and executing the game plan and doing what we need to do to win last night.
You know, basketball is such an interesting psyche, especially when you talk about kids from 18 to 22 years old. And you know, obviously they know, you know, the track record over the last couple of seasons that you've had against. So they certainly had to come in, you know, with a partial psyche that they certainly, you know, could be up against it, you know, especially on the road. But then, you know, you never know what a team having beaten you guys 89-47 in the first game, you know, it's just such an interesting psyche how they would come in with the game. But again, certainly the matchups prior in the last couple of seasons certainly had them figuring that this would be a tough game. But what the fans need to realize, too, is it's such an interesting stylistic matchup because you have a twofold thing. You guys average 76 points a game, which is number one in the Horizon, and yet they, on the flip side, on the other end of the floor, are, you know, they hold teams to just under 50 points per game scoring. So you really have, you know, contrast of styles and numbers that way. So it made it an interesting matchup, and certainly as the game played out, it really played kind of in your favor in the way you wanted the game, you know, obviously with the final score being what it was in terms of 89 to 4. So, I mean, it was just, you know, obviously played in your style of play. It was a more up-tempo game, and you were able to get, you know, score.
Yeah, I mean, we're a team that, I mean, we're known for our offense, and, you know, in the non-conference play, you know, we had some games where we missed some open shots and things like that, but we were running pretty good offense, and then we started our conference play running good offense. In the last 3 weeks, we really have not run good offense at all, and it started at Green Bay. And, you know, we started dribbling the basketball way too much. We were making one pass and shoot it. We were taking a lot of my turn shots, you know, instead of moving the ball. And so after our last game against Wright State, I had our video people actually count the number of times we dribbled in that game against Wright State. And we dribbled the ball 879 times against Wright State. And you're not going to beat anybody dribbling the ball that much. So we spent the last 2 days leading up to Green Bay where we practiced with a basketball with no air in it. And we just worked on moving the ball and cutting and moving and getting the ball reversed and getting back to what running the offense the way we need to run it. And I thought last night we did a great job with ball movement, and you know, we weren't taking the one pass shots and over dribbling, and we had some good ball reversal, and when we do that, we're a good offensive team. But when we make the one pass and take eight or nine dribbles trying to get to the basket and dribble east and west and things like that, we're not real good. And that's where we were the last 3 weeks. And you know, hopefully, you know, the last couple of days of practice going into that last night fix that, and we can keep this going and run the kind of offense that we're known for.
You know, Coach, and again, fans, we're talking to Jeff Tungate, the head coach at Oakland in the Horizon League, again, with a huge upset win over Green Bay last night, the number 21 ranked team in the country. And, Coach, you know, you kind of just, you know, referenced something that I get a chance to watch a ton of games each week and have a bunch of coaches on each week, you know, with this podcast. And, you know, Pat Riley always talked about the disease of me, but there's also the disease of the dribble that continues to permeate, you know, basketball in general and women's basketball. And so it's great to hear you talk about obviously trying to eliminate that disease and how you even charted it and all that. But you felt like it was even more than the Wright State game. It was an issue across a couple of weeks. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, we had a game against Youngstown State where we really moved the ball well and got, you know, great shot selection and won that game and scored 80 points and things like that. But then we turned around the next game and fell in love with the dribble again. And I think, you know, dribble penetration is obviously one of the hardest things to guard, and so you wanna attack. But, you know, we really, if you're not going north and south, you're not dribbling to pass to a teammate, there's no point to dribble. And we just really got away from that. And I think nowadays too, there's so much time spent on ball handling drills. And I remember, you know, back when I played, our ball handling drills was around your right leg, around your left leg, figure eight, things like that. Nothing that ever, where the ball had never touched the floor. Where now everything's involved, you know, pound, 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 pound. I think that carries over to the game too, where players just dribble way too much. And, you know, dribble penetration is an important part of our offense, but it's got to be effective. And, you know, we were dribbling towards half court the last couple of weeks trying to get into our offense. So that was something we really, really needed to fix. And, you know, like I said, hopefully we've done that. And we got another tough game tomorrow against Milwaukee, so we'll find out.
Yeah, you know, you talk about obviously dribble penetration and how hard it is to defend, but there's nothing worse than teams and offenses that don't have flow and don't change sides of the floor. I mean, I talk about it all the time on this podcast with Coach. You know, Bill Self has won, it seems like, 25 straight, you know, Big 12 titles on the men's side with Kansas, and he talks all the time about how the staple to what they do is, you know, changing sides of the floor. And that's just, you know, one of the things that I'm always talking about on this podcast is just, you know, stimulating styles of play, and you got to have flow to what you're doing. There's not enough teams that score enough. I mean, some of these games, even in these Power 5 matchups, you know, are in the 50s. And, you know, for women's basketball, it's just a killer to the average fan and trying to bring eyeballs to the, you know, to the TV games and also bring, you know, butts to the seats. And, you know, thankfully you're one of the teams who at least consistently across the year, you know, averaging, you know, 76 points a game, you know, is representative to a stimulating style of play. And last night certainly was a very stimulating game. And Coach, just to give the fans a little bit more insight, I mean, the Green Bay, you know, the dominant, they're really one of just the great stories in women's basketball that certainly goes underlooked nationally year to year. You think about it in terms of national press, and they've won the Horizon 18 straight years. I mean, Bill Clinton was the last president when they haven't won the Horizon regular season, you know, title. And so, I mean, what a huge, that's, you know, Connecticut. I think that even trumps Connecticut in terms of, there's a number of years with them going back to the Big East, you know, winning regular season championships. I mean, so just a seismic, you know, run by them in that program. And obviously Coach Borseth has been a part of a ton of them, except for the few years that he was at Michigan. But, you know, again, man, they hold teams to 32.5% field goal percentage. And you guys just really handled that when you really think about across the four quarters last night. So if you could just touch upon quickly again, you know, just the run that they've had in that league and how frustrating it must be for the other teams in the conference. Again, except for you guys who at least during the regular season have had a, you know, a handful of wins over the last couple of years. And then just again, how good they've been defensively. A lot of people, you know, when they think of Green Bay who are aware of them, you know, think of the three-point shooting and some of their, you know, offensive prowess, but it's really their defense that's fueled the success this year.
Oh, their defense is unbelievable. I mean, it's one of the best defenses in the country, and you know, the 18 year in a row streak is just phenomenal. I was telling our team, I said, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a church league or a rec league team that's won it 18 years in a row, let alone a Division I college basketball team. I mean, for them to go out and do that 18 years in a row is just absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, and I think, you know, once you get that ingrained in your program, and that's what we're really trying to build here, you can win games just by the name on the front of your jersey. And, you know, those kids know what the expectation level is there, and they know that, you know, there's 18 years of players that have built an unbelievable tradition, an unbelievable foundation, and they don't want to let those players down from the last 18 years. So, you know, so I think a lot of times once you get that tradition going, it's a lot more than the current team. I mean, it goes back 18 years, and they know that they've got to make it 19 because all those other years are counting on them to keep
yeah.
the streak going.
Yeah,
we respect them so much, and just I can't believe what they've been able to accomplish. It's just an unbelievable streak.
Well, that's what I get. It's very similar to a Connecticut-type run, and what you referenced in terms of teams kind of being beat, you know, just by the jersey and when they walk in because of the run they had. And just to give fans, you know, again, a little bit more insight to what this year's team has done at Green Bay and how, you know, how huge a win it is for you guys. I mean, they only had two losses coming in by a total of 5 points, and one of them was to Notre Dame in a game I had watched, you know, and they only lost by 4 points at Notre Dame and truly went toe-to-toe with them. And then they had a one-point loss, you know, on the road at Wisconsin, a game I also got a chance to watch, and that was kind of a crazy ending. So the one thing I will say is they've had a little bit of tough luck in some of these real in the close games because, you know, certainly the loss to you, and we'll talk about, you know, the crazy ending of it all and the wild finish, but they also had a similar tough loss at Wisconsin as well. But just, again, they've been running through people this year. And, again, as we talked about, you know, including the first matchup with you, but again, you know, psyches are everything in sports and in basketball. And the fact that you guys have had recent success against them, you know, had to help kind of, you know, play against what we just talked about. You know, teams feeling like they, you know, they're already kind of beaten, you know, with just facing them and when they walk in. Since you guys have had success and even despite, you know, the drubbing in the first game, can you just speak to the fact that that had to – you know, had to help your team going into the game, knowing that when you guys have played well, you have beaten them in the, you know, recent past.
Yeah, you know, and this team, I mean, I've got a really special group this year. I mean, this is the group that really is helping us turn the corner. And, you know, they're so coachable. They come to work every day. We have great, great practice habits. We got great chemistry. And, you know, most teams, you know, after the way we played at Wright State, I mean, we're down 46-25 at halftime. We come out third quarter and outscore them 30-19, and we're down 9, and we have two wide open threes and two free throws that we missed that would have cut it from there. But, you know, most teams would just kind of roll over and finish it out. This team, they never quit. They always get back up, and that's why, you know, going into the Green Bay game, we've got short memories, and, you know, we always talk about the next game. We don't worry about the last one. We don't worry about what's coming up 2 days down the road. We got the next game, and they put all their focus into what we need to do for that next game. And, you know, to be honest with you, the first game wasn't, other than showing film and things like that, it wasn't even discussed in terms of the score and that type of thing. So this is a resilient team. They have a great bounce back ability, and you know, like I said, we've done it before. They believe it, and they know that they can go out there and get it done. So you know, I'm just really, really proud of how they responded last night.
No, it really was a terrific game through the whole four quarters. And you know, before we really dive into this game, kind of quarter by quarter, you know, just want to let the fans know you're in your fourth season as head coach there at Oakland. But you have a background that's certainly interesting and one I can relate to as someone who's, you know, had a background on the men's side. And you obviously were the men's associate head coach for a few years before, you know, becoming the head coach here at Oakland the last four, and you know, men's associate head coach at IPFW and a men's assistant at Oakland prior. And then you're also a women's assistant, you know, with Oakland back in the late 90s as well. So you kind of dipped back and forth between Oakland and a couple other spots and also the men's side and the women's side. So I can appreciate that background, Coach.
Yeah, actually, my first year I spent was at Oakland Community College with a women's program there. And then you know, went to a school called Rochester College on the men's side down the road. And but, you know, I graduated from Oakland. My wife graduated from Oakland. My parents live 20 minutes from here. My in-laws live 20 minutes from here. This is home. We love the school. And when a change was made 4 years ago, they brought me in, asked me if I'd be interested in taking over the program. And, you know, it was going through some difficult times, and it was my alma mater, and I definitely wanted to do it and wanted to do what I can to get the program going in the right direction again. And it was a great opportunity, and this is home. And when you're coaching at your alma mater, not many people get a chance to do that. And, you know, it's a place that's been really good to me. You know, I've got two wonderful kids because I met my wife here at Oakland, and, you know, I owe a lot to this school and this university. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that this program reaches the highest level possible because this place has done some great, great things for me.
Well, it's, you know, there are a number of coaches that, you know, are at their alma mater, and there's always a special passion. There's no question, you know, when a coach has gone to the school and it's his alma mater, especially I find in recruiting that you can, you know, always transfer the message, you know, to kids about, you know, how much love you have for the school and, as you said, what it's done for you. So that's always a nice little niche when you have that, when you're coaching at your alma mater for sure. But I'm always curious, you know, because, again, being a guy who came from the men's side and always, you know, through my career as a mid-major Division I coach, was always looking to transfer as much of the men's game to the girls, especially in areas of player development. And are you still kind of and I know for me, I'm a junkie of it still, you know, in terms of stealing X's and O's and player development stuff. But is that the case for you? Were you still a junkie of the men's side and trying to transfer as much from that side of it to these girls?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a junkie of basketball in general. If there's a game on, I'm watching it. So, you know, I try to take whatever I can and watch as many games as I can and incorporate a lot of the things from different programs or different things I see on TV. And, you know, so yeah, I do carry over a lot. And I had a great opportunity to work for Greg Campy, the men's coach here at Oakland. He's been here for, I think, 33 years now. And that was just a great, great opportunity for me to have a chance because he gave me a lot of freedom. You know, as his associate head coach, he let me do a lot that a lot of coaches would never allow their staffs to do. And so he gave me some great, great experience. And so a lot of the things I learned from him, I've been able to incorporate into our program. And as a matter of fact, one of the plays that he runs for a late game situation we ran last night with 3 seconds to go on the clock when we needed a baseline out of bounds play, we stole from him and it worked. We scored. And so, you know, a lot of the things we do, I've taken from him and learned from him. So I've been very, very fortunate to be around some great coaches and implement a lot of the things that they do into our program.
You know, and then certainly the run Coach Campy's had on the men's side is distinguishable. And Kate Felder, just a great guard that's now I think he's still hanging on in the NBA, but just you know, a terrific guard for them over the previous you know, couple of years. And speaking of the men's game, how about the audience you had there last night? Andre Drummond and Stanley Johnson from the Pistons were at the game there. Like, oh man, that is a big time women's game when you got the pros coming out. It's not like it was a doubleheader where, you know, they were watching the women's game as a prelude to the men's game, and they came out specifically for your game, and you know, that's a big deal.
Yeah, no, it's great. We're so fortunate where we're located. We've got such a great location, and you know, to have those guys around is obviously great. And you know, having been on the men's side, one of our former players, Reggie Hamilton, he was the leading scorer in Division I basketball when he played here at Oakland. And Reggie's a you know, just one of my favorite people of all time. And him and Andre are really, really good friends. And so you know, Reggie comes out and supports our program a lot. And when those guys are in town, they come out and with Reggie and get a chance to watch the game. So, you know, I think that obviously is a great recruiting tool when you got them sitting in the front row watching your games. But I think it says a lot about them as people too, that they just love the game of basketball and love to watch good basketball. So it was great having them here last night supporting us. I know it meant a lot to our team, and I know it meant a lot to our school that they would come out and watch us like that.
Well, and hopefully, you know, it sends a message, you know, to fans, you know, that, you know, again, you know, big time NBA players and bowlers like that are a fan of the women's game and like to come out and see good basketball. And they certainly saw it last night. I thought maybe Andre was coming to get a couple of free throw tips from some of the girls there because he could use that. And then the other thought I thought maybe he was coming is to see another dominant rebounder, and actually a couple of them, but your kid, Hannah Little, the 6'1", you know, junior, I mean, we're averaging 12 rebounds a game, third in the country behind Osohor, and I have it here, the other one, but she's behind Osohor and Jamaris Davis, who I actually know well from Fordham. Yeah, I should have known that right off the top, but third in the country in rebounding at, you know, 12 a game. So obviously Andre coming out and coming to respect another dominant rebounder in Hannah Little, and then we'll now segue into last night's game. And Coach, she's such an impressive, distinguishable player, 6'1", but as thin as they get. But, you know, just an extremely versatile kid, Hannah Little, in the standpoint that about, you know, 6 foot, 6 foot one, she brings, you know, the capacity to rebound like a post and block shots and be active inside, but yet also has the perimeter capacity, you know, to be a playmaker with assists and handle the ball and be such a threat off the dribble. I mean, just a very intriguing player, but those rebounding numbers are off the charts for sure.
Yeah, she plays so hard, and the thing that people don't realize is she practices every day just as hard as she plays. I mean, she brings it every single day in practice with that same intensity and that same energy, and she, you know, she rarely gets tired, and if she does, you take her out for 30 seconds, she's back ready to go. I mean, she can play 38, 39 minutes at that intensity level, and she practices the same way, you know, and she's probably, I always joke with her, she's probably a little mad at me because she had one game where she had a chance at a triple-double. She had 9 steals, but we were winning big, so I took her out of the game, so she was 1 steal short of a triple-double. And then she had a game a couple weeks ago. She had 19 rebounds. And but, again, we were winning big, so I took her out of the game. Last thing I want to do is get her hurt trying to get her 20th. So I told her, I said, that just makes you need to want to get it more. So get that triple-double and get the 20 rebounds in another game. So, but she's a great teammate. Everyone on the team loves her. And what I love about her is just not just the way she plays in the games, but her practice habits. I mean, when everyone sees a player like that practicing that hard every single day, they're just going to follow suit. So, you know, she's one that she just does so many things, and very few people at her position. I mean, she had 6 assists last night and 1 turnover. I mean, at her spot, you know, that just shows that she's unselfish, willing to share the ball, and you know, and the way she goes and gets it is just remarkable.
Yeah, you know, and a couple things about her. And as coaches, we know they say the teams often take on the personality of their coaches, but the best players almost always set the tone, you know, for what a team's going to be about. And especially when you talk about, you know, practice habits and bringing it every day. And I tell you the thing I love about her is she plays with a smile so often. You know, whether it's adversity, whether it's a prosperity, there's often a smile across her face. And, you know, I just think it kind of makes for a unique, you know, personality on the court. And, Coach, she's always on the floor. Obviously, I referenced that, you know, she's very thin and 6'1", but between her athletic, active style and being so thin, it seems like she's always on the floor. Every couple of minutes, she's on the floor. But, you know, even again last night, played 38 minutes, and you mentioned, you know, the practice habits daily. I mean, just a kid who has a great appetite for the game and for competing. And one of the, you know, underlying stories of last night was not only her play and playing 38 minutes with that kind of energy and work ethic that she did, but it was also your other terrific player in Taylor Gleason, who not only dropped 20 points and just made some legit shots. I mean, she's a transfer from Illinois, for fans who don't know, and she played like a high major guard last night. But the thing about it, she played the 40 minutes, and I just absolutely love baller types that can, you know, play 30, 40 minutes a game and not have either effort or production drop off. And, you know, Taylor was just sensational last night, you know, with some of the big shots she made, and then also, again, playing the point guard position, so demanding for 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the workouts she puts herself through, I mean, what she does in the summer, what she does on her own before and after practice, I mean, there's a reason she's in that kind of shape. I mean, nobody, she's the same way. She practices just as hard as she plays, but she spends so much time in the gym and so much time working on her game. She does a great job of taking care of her body and stretching and doing all those things she needs to do, ice baths and things to make sure her body's taken care of. But, you know, she's in unbelievable condition, and she's one that I had to put a rule in that on days of the game, she couldn't come in at 7 a.m. to get an hour of shots in, then come to shoot around, then play an afternoon game. Because she's just, I mean, she's in here all the time. She's one you got to kick out a day or two and just say, hey, just take a little time off, take a little break, and get back at it tomorrow. Because she's a gym rat. She loves the game of basketball, and she loves to compete. She's a winner. And she, you know, she played 40 minutes last night, and she can turn around and she'll be able to play 40 tomorrow and won't be tired again tomorrow, because that's just the type of person. She doesn't get tired, and she does it because she does a great job of getting herself in shape and does a great job of taking care of her body.
No, I mean, a true baller type, and you know, 20 points last night, 4 for 7, and just some big league shots in there, including, you know, a couple of tough pull-ups, but those threes were – were just big league releases and shots for sure. And so certainly Gleason and Little led the charge last night. But I got to tell you, the unsung player, or to me, you know, the underlying kid in the game was Nicole Dodd, because especially her third quarter, you know, you guys trailing at halftime and their first few possessions of the second half, Coach, and of that third quarter, they were kind of shredding you a little bit and, you know, and really executing those first four or five possessions. I'm like, this is not a good start. And obviously you had matched them with a couple of buckets, but then Dodd comes, you know, and I was a starter in the game, but it felt like she was a role player off the bench, because she kind of was unheard of for the rest of the game. But that third quarter, she went off. She had three big threes and basically had all of her 11 points in that third quarter. And so obviously the performance of Dodd in that third quarter to get you guys kind of, you know, stabilized and kind of, you know, have you go toe-to-toe, because they were off to a hot start. They honestly shot well for most of the game, for almost all the game, but certainly to start that second half. I know you at halftime, you had been talking, probably made some adjustments and stuff, and they came out strong with their execution to start the third quarter, but Dodd really gave you guys a boost with her perimeter shooting.
Yeah, I mean, she can really shoot the basketball. And the one thing about her, I mean, you know, you're not going to put her up against other people in a race, in a 100-yard dash. You know, you're not going to put her in a vertical jumping contest. But the thing about her is she is so smart. I mean, she's a 4.0 student. And on defense, you know, what she lacks in foot speed and quickness, she makes up for in intelligence. She's always in the right spot. She's always where she needs to be. And, you know, the fact that she can shoot the basketball and be in the right spot on defense gives her a chance to play, because, you know, you're not going to be blown away by her athleticism by any means, but her intelligence more than makes up for that. And she wants to win. She's got a big heart, and she's an unbelievable teammate, and she can make big shots. I mean, she missed one. I think we got an offensive rebound, kicked it back to her and knocked down the second one. I mean, she's got that shooter's mentality. She doesn't worry about the last shot. She's going to make the next shot, and those were some huge shots she made for us. But where she's really improved for us is on the defensive end, because, you know, last year she was a defensive liability where we really couldn't play her. And this year she's really worked hard on just making sure she studies the game, make sure she's in the right spot, and what she lacks for in quickness, she makes for in smarts, and that's allowed her to be able to put in the starting lineup for us and play a lot more minutes this year than what she did last year.
Well, the thing about her too is, you know, in a 6 foot unit, the 6 foot size, you know, which even at the high major level is a legitimate size for a wing and a backcourt player, and never mind at the mid major size. So, you know, that size is distinguishable too for a perimeter player. You know, the other kid who is a very intriguing player for you, and I know that, you know, just even kind of learning about your team a little bit more last night, she really has stepped up from a year ago, is Leah Summerfield, and she had the 14 points last night and a few rebounds, but the ability to shoot the three for her, she was 3 of 6 from the three. And, you know, again, I always say that's what gives in a team, you know, an explosive nature, is when they have that forward or that post player that can step out and shoot, and, you know, it certainly enhances spacing and forces, you know, the other team. It gives them some, you know, some dynamics as far as matching up and having to go out and, you know, and cover her. I just feel like most of the explosive offenses in the country have a post player that can shoot from the perimeter, and certainly Leah Summerfield brings that dynamic for you guys and had some, you know, three big threes last night as well.
Yeah, I mean, she's probably the most improved player I may have ever coached. She's from where she was a year ago to where she is today is not even close. She's gotten, you know, so much tougher, so much stronger. She had a rebound the other day. I think it was in our game against Northern Kentucky at a key time, and she went up with two hands like, nobody else is going to get it. I'm going to get it. And, you know, a year ago she would have never gotten that ball. And, you know, she's playing with a lot of confidence this year. She worked really hard this summer and really has developed her game. And, you know, really, to be honest with you, the most important position on our team is having that stretch post. You know, our offense is the most effective when we have that. So for her to have that ability, and, you know, she's also a really, really good help side defender. I mean, she does a great job of helping on drives and things like that with active hands and getting her hands up in the air and trying to create tough passes on skips and things like that. So not only has she improved so much on the offensive end, but she's definitely one of our best defenders at the other end as well. And that's a huge key for for us because, you know, we like to play pressure defense. And if you know you've got someone back there that knows what they're doing, they're going to be there on the help. If you get beat, it allows you to pressure even more. And our players trust her. They know she's going to be in the right spot, which allows us to get up there and pressure the ball a little bit harder because we know she's always going to be there for us.
Yeah, no, I mean, you guys definitely have firepower, you know, for sure, and certainly allowed you to, you know, to exhibit it last night. And, you know, even, the, you know, Shakia Graves, who comes off the bench, who had obviously the huge play there at the end, which we'll get to. But, you know, she dropped 10 points off the bench in an efficient 4-for-7. And, you know, Nola Anderson, certainly, you know, a capable player in your starting backcourt. That definitely an intriguing team overall, just in terms of the pieces that you have, you know, within your rotation and your roster there. So it's a stimulating team to watch moving forward for sure. But, you know, as we look to dive into, and do you have about 5 or 10 more minutes? I didn't ask you your schedule.
Sure.
And know how to go terrific because I wanted to dive into
this
game.
No, I'm good, Coach. We don't practice till 3:30 today, so I got plenty of time.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I got to tell you, you know, the podcast and what we do at the show is great, but sometimes Coach Bill's got to get a little better at keeping these coaches to a shorter time limit. I get carried away with diving, you know, as a junkie diving into these games, and sometimes it can be a little unfair. So it's good to hear that you have some more time, because we got to dive into this game. And you know, Coach, they start off the game, you know, shooting 62% from the field in the first quarter. You know, 8-for-13. They led 22-19 to at the end of the first quarter. They hit 5 of their first 7 threes, you know, overlapping the two quarters. And, you know, certainly they got off to a hot start, and that's not what you're looking for to obviously try and spring an upset. So, you know, if you can harken back and remember to kind of what your thoughts were with the team at the end of the first quarter, I'm sure a lot of it was defense related.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole first half, I mean, they had two players that I think they had, if I'm not mistaken, 28 of their 38 points in the first half were by two players. And so, you know, we had to really, really focus on that going into the second half. But that first quarter, you know, I still felt pretty good after that first quarter, because the biggest concern you have when you're playing Green Bay is, can you score? And, you know, I just – the fact that we were scoring in that first quarter, I felt really, really confident in what we were doing. And even though we had to fix our defense a little bit and, you know, we weren't rebounding, we weren't getting the 50-50 balls like we needed to, we had some careless turnovers, I thought, that led to some things for them as well. But, you know, but I was pretty pleased with where we were, because we were scoring the ball and we were running good offense. And I knew if we can continue that, we were giving ourselves a chance to win, because – that's the whole key to Green Bay. I mean, you've got to be able to score against them. So I felt pretty good after that first quarter. Going in at halftime, our team felt pretty good. And for whatever reason, we've always been a third quarter team. I mean, we had 29 points in the third quarter, and
yeah.
I don't know. I have to look up the exact number, but I want to say we've had at least 9 or 10 games this year where in the third quarter we scored over 26 points. So, you know, I told our team jokingly, I said, I think what I'm going to do is when we go into a lull, if it's the first quarter or second quarter, I'm just going to call 3 timeouts in a row. We're going to run in the locker room, pretend it's halftime, and then come back out. We'll be in good shape. But I felt good with where we were at halftime. I thought, you know, the second quarter we started defending a little bit better. I still thought we were running good offense. We didn't make as many shots in that second quarter, but I felt pretty confident. And I know walking in the locker room, I had that sense from our team too that they felt pretty good at where we were.
Well, the thing about it, and you talked about those third quarter outputs and the 29 points that I was going to get to, and you did a great job of referencing it, is that you did it against a team that's, again, known for defense and holding teams under 50, you know, for a game. And here you are scoring 29 and a quarter. And, again, they hold people at 32.5% field goal shooting. And, you know, so, again, you did it against a terrific defensive team. But, Coach, you mentioned that, you know, your third quarter prowess across the season. It must be that those great halftime adjustments and speeches from Colgate.
Well, I wish I could take credit for that, but whatever it is, I don't know. I don't know if it's the water we get when we go in there or what we do, but whatever it is, we're not going to change it, because that seems to be our lucky formula. It's just, you know, we got to figure out a few of those other quarters, but we always seem to come out that third quarter and score the basketball. And again, it's the strangest things I've seen, but for whatever reason, it works. So that's why I went in a 4-point game, and I thought, you know, boy, if we can have our typical third quarter, we're going to be in pretty good shape, and we did, and it turned out well. And, you know, and I know, you know, you know, they haven't been in a close game in a while. And so I knew that if we could keep that thing close going down the stretch, I really thought that was in our favor, just because they have not, you know, because they've been dominating teams so much that they just haven't been in a close game in a while. So I thought that would be in our favor too. If we could get that to the fourth quarter in a close game, I thought we'd be in good shape.
Yeah, and that's such an interesting, again, I talked about, you know, earlier in this interview, you know, the psyches of athletes and players and even coaches and teams. And that is, you know, a legitimate issue when you have teams that haven't played in close games. How are they going to react when they get down to the last couple minutes of a game, and especially the team that's supposed to win? You never know how that's going to play into the final possessions. And we'll get to it here in a few minutes. It was kind of an odd little, you know, last minute for them in terms of timeouts and some of the decisions, for sure. But just backing up a bit, we talked about the first quarter, and you certainly didn't reference, you know, the two players, and they have two or three players that certainly are distinguishable, and Mayrin Kraker, who, you know, I've been trying to promote Green Bay actually, you know, nationally for a couple of weeks, trying to obviously help, you know, women's basketball in the mid-majors out there. But the kid Kraker is an absolute stud at 6 foot. She's a graduate student and averaging 18 points a game. But they also have Jessica Lindstrom, who's, you know, averaging 10 boards a game, one of the better rebounders in the country, but yet is also versatile to step out. And Kraker had 15 points, basically, you know, at halftime. Lindstrom had 13. And that Kraker kid, I tell you, you know, the more you get to watch, what an absolute load she is to deal with, because at 6 feet, she can shoot the three with an absolute quick, like Carmelo type release. And yet you put her, you know, anywhere around the lane, and the kid is strong and quick. I mean, her first couple of steps are really quick. She's an absolute load to deal with offensively. And then certainly Lindstrom is as well, because she can kill you on the backboards and, you know, with offensive rebounds and putbacks, but yet has a pure stroke out to the three and is a big, strong kid. And then they have LeClaire as well, who is a very good player. But those two forwards, and the thing about it is, because, and those aren't even their center. You know, they have a center, you know, so that's their forward and kind of, you know, quasi-small forward that you're looking at. So the matchups with those two are certainly a problem.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, they're unbelievable players, and they do such a great job of exploiting mismatches too. And, you know, I mean, they'll post their guards. They stretch you out. They can. I mean, they just do so many things well, and they're so disciplined on both ends of the floor. And you know, those two in particular are just really, really tough matchups and tough people to guard. But, you know, I thought the second half we did a much, much better job than what we did in the first half. But they're definitely two of the best players in the league, that's for sure.
Now, and you mentioned the second half being a lot more kinder. I mean, Kraker wound up being 2 for 9 from the 3-point line, and obviously a majority of those misses, almost all of them, you know, were in the second half. And you know, they went 7 for 21 from 3 for the game, and certainly a team very capable of shooting the three with prowess. And that's one of the things, you know, watching the game, the announcers were talking about, you know, the style disparity and how much Green Bay wanted the game, you know, at a slower pace and a lower score. But they certainly are very capable offense. I mean, they're a team that, you know, that can explode on you offensively too. And I know you referenced it. And that's the thing about it. I mean, as much as the talk was about you guys wanting the up-tempo and high-scoring game, they certainly have no problem scoring, you know, led by those stars for sure. But, you know, you look at halftime, you guys, as you referenced earlier, you're trailing by 38-33, and, you know, field goals, both teams were shooting it well. You guys were at 48%, 14-29, and they were at 50%, 15-30. In the three-point line, you guys were shooting 40%, 6-15. They were leading the rebounding battle, you know, 19-12, and had 7 second chance points. And then the free throws, you guys only got to the line once, and they got their 4-6, you know, from the free throw line. But both teams shooting well, and it was kind of, you know, the rebounding and the second chance points. And I know in your halftime interview, you know, with the play-by-play guy there, you talked about that, you know, just being a little bit more physical and kind of controlling the lane and the boards, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, there's times that we've just got to get tougher, and, you know, and we have a tendency sometimes where our guards will leak out and things, because we do play fast, and you know, against a team like that, you definitely need all five people rebounding. You got to be physical. And I told them, I don't care if you get a blockout foul. I mean, go get a blockout foul. You know, block out so hard that the refs call a foul, I'd be fine with that. Because I just thought we were getting a little bit out tough, and that's something that we can't do. And so, you know, I thought the second half would show a lot more toughness. And, even though late in the game they got a couple big offensive rebounds on us, but you know, for the most part, I thought the second half we played a lot tougher than what we did the first half. And you know, sometimes I think we play a little bit on our heels in to start games. And you know, I just thought that we just needed to impose our will a little bit more than what we were doing.
I hear you for sure. And then, like I said, you know, then we start the third quarter, and as I referenced earlier, I mean, I thought they got off to a real hot start offensively. They you know, they were getting execution. They got a three off a flare screen. They were getting, you know, a couple of high percentage buckets off their screen, and they just in the first four or five possessions, they came off to a hot start in terms of execution. And but you guys were matching them, and again, Nicole Dodd certainly, as I referenced earlier, was a huge boost to getting you guys going and going toe to toe with them. And here's the interesting stat for them, Coach: their first nine shots in the first 5 minutes of the third quarter were eight threes. You know, so that's that's eight of nine, and four. Obviously, they were four of eight. So thankfully, from that point on, you guys pretty much. You know, weren't as effective from there, but that's quite a stat to start a third quarter. Eight of nine of the first field goals were threes, and four of eight for make. So they certainly, again, that's the explosion they have, though. I mean, again, obviously the defensive numbers certainly stand out when you look at them, but they have, you know, on the floor almost at all times four or five kids who can shoot the three.
Well, the key to them is you've got to use your timeouts wisely, because they always seem to go on a huge run in the first half, and they always seem to go on a huge run either in the third quarter or early fourth quarter. And so you've got to use those timeouts to where you can't let it get to an 8 to 10 point run, because you know you're down four, they go on an 8-0 run, now you're down 12. I mean, you gotta be really, really smart in how you use your timeouts against Green Bay, because you know, they're known for those runs, and if you let that run get away from you, the game's going to get away from you. So, you know, fortunately, we're able to, you know, that first quarter, I think they got up seven, if I'm not mistaken, we were able to. You just got to use your timeout smart against them, because if you let that run get too far away from you, you're gonna have a tough time catching up to them, especially the way they defend.
We're speaking with Jeff Tungate, the head coach at Oakland. Thankfully, in a lengthy spot to break down his upset win over number 21 ranked Green Bay last night. And Coach, you referenced, you know, using your timeouts against Green Bay and you help stunt their runs. And that's also men's games trade a little bit more than even the women's side. You know, again, watching a ton of games, you know, week to week in women's basketball, that's still something that's a little behind the men's game in terms of coaches, you know, really knowing how to stop runs using, you know, timeouts. It's kind of a pro deal and then a men's game deal where the coaches are trained to really kind of, you know, stunt those runs by the other teams using timeouts. So do you feel that that's also something that you've kind of brought with you from the men's game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the one thing that, you know, I learned a lot from Coach Campy, like I said earlier. But one of the things that he's really good at is not letting teams go on a run, and also picking times where, as a team, they just have to figure it out. And, you know, he does a great job of, in the non-conference, you know, you come times where you just got to figure it out on your own. And then the conference play, you can kind of help them stop those runs. So you can combine letting them figure it out with what you need to do to assist them in that. And so, you know, that's another thing I really learned from him, is he does a great job of keeping teams from going on runs and calling a set to get a bucket or getting something around the rim or something at the foul line to stop that run. So that's definitely something I learned from him that I brought to our program.
If I can follow that with just with an outlying thought, you know, I get to watch UConn every game here, you know, in the New York. We get the TV package of all their games and stuff. And it's just incredible to me that you'll have these, and obviously, you know, it's a daunting cast to begin with. And you're likely going to lose all the games, especially the teams in their conference. But you'll see the teams in their conference specifically, you know, let them get out to the 13 or 15, you know, 0 run.
you know, to start the game before finally calling the timeout. I'm like, we're sitting here, you know, pulling my hair out at watching the film. Like, you got to call it maybe at 8 or 10. You can't let it get out to 15 or 20 before you call the timeout to at least try to settle your kids down or stunt the run a little bit. It's just amazing to me still in women's basketball you see consistently the lack of insight or just awareness or feel for when to call some of these timeouts to stunt some of these runs. And as you know, with the new rules too, the quarter rules too, you don't get, you used to have the media timeouts every 4 minutes. You don't get that now in the quarters. You get the one media timeout, around the 5 minute mark, but so you don't have even, that. So I think it predicates even more, having a feel for calling timeouts. And you just see, a lot of coaches across the country just not have that feel, Coach. So it's frustrating for me as a former coach, but but, go ahead.
I think with a team like UConn, I think most teams would be out of timeouts by the end of the first quarter, the way they are.
Yeah,
I mean, what
they've
done. You
might as well use them.
I mean, that,
you might as well
yeah,
use them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
I mean, that.
Going to give them the fourth quarter.
I was joking last night. You said Andre Drummond was at our game, and I figured Andre Drummond wanted to come to the game just so he could see a close game for once, because being a UConn grad, all the games he went to there, he probably never saw a game less than 40, So, I mean, that what they've done there, I mean, that is just absolutely unbelievable to me, what they've done. I mean, it's amazing how year in and year out to just have that kind of dominance. And you'd think that you're going to have at least one game where you're not going to have it, or you're going to have one game where it's just not going right. They bring it every single game, and it's just amazing what he's done there and what that program's done. I mean, that is one of the greatest streaks in college basketball.
Well, and obviously we want to get back to your game, but I think the thing that keeps getting lost in the numbers and in the dominance are two things, and then you kind of referenced one of them for sure, is just how hard they play every year. They just play harder than everybody else for 40 minutes. And then the other thing that's a shame is just the level of execution. I mean, why I'm absolutely obsessed watching them game in, game out, is just, the Picasso that they throw out there, for most games. I mean, the level of execution, the level of team play, collective, play on both ends is just ridiculous. And I think that's the shame of it all, is that the numbers dwarf, just how great their product is. I call it a product in terms of what teams throw on the floor in terms of style of play or execution and that kind of thing. And to reference it back to, to last night and your team, but it's again kind of what you say, and like we talked about. I mean, Green Bay's had a similar run just in terms of regular season dominance, and that's what again makes the win that you guys had last night such a big deal when you talk about the national scope of women's basketball. And again, I mean, you guys have actually done it. You swept last week in last year's series, and so you 4 of the last 6 against them. But you just cannot say enough about what they've done in your league. And again, that win last night is just huge. It's huge on two levels. It's one, huge to hopefully, as you referenced earlier, get you guys going. You've been inconsistent and up and down in the season, and you hope that a win like that now, in early February can kind of get you guys, get the ship righted to the point where you can really use this win to propel you. Because as a coach, I mean, the win is obviously seismic, but it really loses a lot if you don't, if you don't move off of this win with consistent play,
Right, and that's what's happened to us the last couple years. We've come off a win against Green Bay, and then we'll lose a couple in a row instead of building on that momentum. And, that's something that we need to – I think this team's different. They've got a different mindset, and so I really expect this team to use this to our advantage and propel us forward. But that's the thing that's really hurt us the last couple years, that win against Green Bay is – taken so much out of us for whatever reason that we haven't been able to respond the next couple games, it seems. So that's why, I told him last night, I said, you guys, great win, I want you to enjoy it, but I said, as soon as you walk out of this building, it's Milwaukee, because that's next, that's tomorrow. And it's a great win, but I guarantee I'd trade those wins over Green Bay for what they've got in the conference championship and NCAA tournament appearances. So as big of a win as it is, they still, they still have the league titles, and they still have the NCAA tournament appearances. So, we've got to enjoy it, but we've got to move on and get ready for the next one in order to get to where they are.
Well, and the thing it'll do, and just to give fans a note, you guys are now 12-10 overall, 6-5 in the conference, so certainly you have a lot of work to do. You know, currently basically tied for fifth place with Cleveland State, and you have a lot of work to do to try and climb in the standings here over the next month. And the other thing it's going to do is put even a little bit more, you know, of a heightened, interest and stimulation in your opponents, because now it's, again, you know, it's the team that once again beat Green Bay, and so, you know, they're certainly going to be reminded of that, the opponents, every time they play you guys now for the rest of the month. But that's the big deal, you know, as we both just referenced. You know, it's obviously a huge win, but it can't last too long, and it has to now propel you guys moving forward, because you have a lot of work to do, you know, here in the next 30 days to, you know, to climb in the standings. And more than anything, you know, it's like what we were just talking about with UConn, it's to get the product at a consistent level, and that's what makes them so great, is the focus is always on the product and the execution, and the numbers and the results kind of take care of themselves. And for you guys, as you even referenced earlier in the interview, you know, you're obviously, you know, we're trying to get, you know, more consistency and better execution in terms of the offensive end, and the less dribbling and changing sides of the floor, and that's, you know, as a coach, that's now what needs to be taken from the game, even beyond beating Green Bay. It needs to be seen, this is again what happens to our product when we play this way.
Right, process. Exactly. And that's, you know, that's the thing that, you know, we talked about that right away after the game. Said, okay, now that we move the ball tonight, does that mean we're going to do it on Saturday? We're going to go back to dribbling again. And, you know, and I think, you know, our like I said, our team, they're so coachable. And, you know, the biggest thing we've had, you know, Hannah Little was a transfer, sat out last year and playing this year. Taylor Gleason, transfer from Illinois. You know, Shakia Graves sat out last year as a transfer from DePaul. You know, so we've had some players that, you know, needed the time to kind of get back in the flow of things again. And you know, I hope, you know, now that we're into February, I think those players are starting to hit their stride, and this is the time of year you want to play. And, you know, I told them that, you know, the road to success isn't going to be a perfect line upward. I mean, there's going to be bumps along the way, and you just want to make sure you're peaking at the right time. And so now that, you know, we got this win in early February, you know, you hope that this can propel us to where we can get that consistency going and get going on a nice little run heading into the conference tournament.
Well, that's a great underlying point you make, you know, especially with, you know, with Little and Gleason, you know, the transfers and the star players of the team, is, you know, it takes some time for teams to not only, you know, and obviously they sat out and they were within the program for a year, but to now be on the court and not only for them individually to get, you know, the consistency back or getting the flow of playing, but also, you know, the chemistry of kids playing with each other, you know, and that whole thing. And so, and that's why this is always the month. It's, you know, we talk in coaching that, you know, by February, freshmen are now no longer freshmen. They're kind of freshmen and a half or sophomores. And then also, you know, by this point now, you've had the 2 or 3 months where, in terms of, you know, the system and kids playing with each other, it's go time. You know, there's really no more of those excuses and stuff. And so, again, hopefully now here at the beginning of February and coming off this kind of win and the way you guys played, it's hopefully everyone's ready now to, you know, to march moving forward together and, you know, and to really make a run here in February for you guys. But just for a few more minutes to get back to the game, you know, obviously we left off talking about the third quarter, and Dodd, again, was just huge in that quarter with the threes, and she had almost like 8 straight at one point with 2 free throws. And speaking of the free throws with her, the kid's like 8 for 8. When I see kids like that, you know, she's such a big-time free-throw shooter, and the thing you like about her, she literally just, as soon as it gets in her hand, she puts it up. She doesn't waste any time with paralysis or any of those extra little routines or any of that stuff, but she's one of those kids that would always talk to the player development type. We got to get you to learn the art, and I talk about it often on this podcast. On the women's side, and God bless you with your men's background, you know that the men take a little bit more of an art in terms of drawing fouls. They watch so much basketball, you know, especially the pros, they play so much basketball, they learn the art of drawing fouls and selling it to refs and that kind of thing. And I think often on the women's side that's not the case. They don't play as much basketball, usually, in terms of pickup and stuff. They don't watch as much, you know, basketball on TV, usually, most girls, in terms of, and including the NBA, and I don't think they learn the art of drawing fouls. Well, a girl like Nicole Dodd, you know, I had a player like her, I remember when I was at Northeastern, that was, you know, a sniper you know, and she shot literally, coach, like 95% from the free throw line. And I said to her, what's the best thing you do? And everyone, you know, associated her with being a three-point shooter. She goes, you know, shooting threes. I go, no, actually the best thing you do is shooting free throws, so we got to get you to the line more.
Right, yeah, yeah. And she's, you know, and the one thing that, I mean, she is just a spot-on three-point shooter, but the last couple of games she actually put the ball on the floor and looked pretty good going to the basket. But she transferred to us from Vincennes University in Indiana and as a junior college player, and she,
yeah.
I think she was either one or two in the nation in free throws her sophomore year in junior college. So she can knock them down, that's for sure. And she's, like you said, she doesn't take a whole lot of time to think. She just gets it, shoots it, makes it.
God bless her, because that always kills me when I see the kids with the paralysis. Especially after the dribbles, you know, they'll wait 2 or 3 seconds and they stare at the rim. They're like, oh, that's one of the things I always eliminated as a player development guy, eliminate that paralysis time at the free throw line. But, you know, just to get back to the game quickly, again, you end the third quarter, as you referenced earlier, 29 points you guys scored, and it was a 29-23 quarter for you guys. And you guys went 5 of 10 from the three-point line, again, led by Dodd with the three threes, and, you know, you wind up taking the lead to end the quarter at 63-61. So we head to the fourth quarter. And I got to tell you, Coach, one of the biggest plays in the game was on a rebound, because early enough within the first couple of minutes, Lindstrom gets her fourth foul. They're terrific forward, you know, going for a defensive rebound. And, you know, she had to sit on the bench for at least a majority of that fourth quarter. And to me, that was a huge deal, because it not only obviously took her out of the game at that point, and such a productive player and such a load to deal with, but when she got back in about the three-minute mark, you know, I thought she missed a couple of shots as well that seemed to be a little bit maybe of a product of having sat on the bench for the – you know, for a majority of the quarter. So I thought that was really one of the huge plays in the game, with Lindstrom getting her fourth foul within the first couple of minutes of the fourth.
Yeah, I agree. And she was playing so well. And again, she's a matchup nightmare too. So that was a huge turning point for us to have her pick up that fourth foul, and that kind of limited them a little bit what they could do offensively. So that was a huge, huge play, and one that we really needed. So, you know, it happened at the perfect time, that's for sure.
And then, you know, another little omen thing. I always look for omens. I'm one of those coaches that, you know, in a game, I'm looking for an omen that's going to tell me that, you know. And one of them was you had a baseline out of bounds in about the six-minute mark with only a couple seconds on the shot clock. And I'm sure you remember the play. And you threw a little alley-oop for Hannah Little, and she was kind of falling back and, you know, tossed up a shot. But with her athleticism, it was a little bit more than just a toss by somebody else's you know, standards, and the thing rolled in. And to me, that was one of those little omens that, all right, I think they're going to get this done, because when those kind of plays go backwards, she's falling backwards and, you know, on the catch and kind of just toss it up, the sucker rolled in. You're like, all right, that's a good omen for us.
Yeah, and that's one you talked about, what I brought from the men's side. I can thank Greg Campy for that play right there, because that came straight from his playbook. So I texted him after the game, and I said, I owe you, Coach, because that one we took straight from his playbook. But it makes the play look a lot better when you got someone like that that can jump and get up there and get it, because there aren't too many players that can get that ball that she got and be able to still score it in the angle she caught it. So that was a huge play, and it just shows her athleticism. But Coach Campy deserves all the credit on that one.
Well, and you executed it. So, and again, did you feel like that was kind of one of those, oh, I don't know if you're into omens too during the course of a game, but that was one of those where you're like, all right, I'm feeling good about this when those kind of plays go down the stretch of a game.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I've already kept you, you know, for an hour, which is ridiculous. And thankfully, you've had, you know, the time. I just want to keep you for a couple more. We'll go down now to break down the stretch of this game, the last couple minutes. And, you know, it's 71-71. And, you know, your last true possession had to be frustrating. Obviously, you get the shot clock violation there. And then, you know, Green Bay calls timeout, and they wind up putting another second. So there's 10 seconds on the clock. But certainly, you know, at a tie game in the last possession, that's got to be one of those. And I saw you pointing to your head with the kids when they came over. And so obviously you can maybe share with us what exactly was said there at that point. But certainly as a coach, you know, in a 71-71 tie game with a chance to upset Green Bay, that's got to be one of those possessions that you just – if you had any hair left, Coach, you would absolutely pull it out of your head.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I didn't want to call a timeout in that situation because Green Bay is so good after timeouts and what they do defensively, and they defend sideline out of bounds plays so well. And so, you know, I didn't want to take a chance on the sideline of bounds where we throw it away, they get a steal going the other way. And last year, late in the game, we called a couple timeouts, ran a couple sideline of bounds plays we hadn't run yet, and they guarded them. We couldn't get the ball in bounds. And, you know, and I trust this team. I mean, I trust them to make the plays. And where I was pointing at my head was, in that situation, we want to get the ball to the rim. You know, and get the ball to the rim, make the ref make a call. Yeah. Either, you know, either block charge, but get the ball to the rim, and if they overhelp, then kick it to the corner for a three. And, you know, we just didn't get the ball to the rim, and we just, you know, we didn't execute the way we needed to at that point of time. And I'd rather have a shot clock violation with a chance to set our defense as opposed to calling that timeout, have them do a great job defending that sideline of bounds play, us throw it away and things like that. And then, you know, when we got down at the end, we had a foul to give. And so, you know, we talked about, you know, and we talk about it, we practice it, we have a term that we call it and stuff like that when we have a foul to give. So we talked about that, just make sure it's not on the shot, not going to the rim and things. And then when they had the ball sideline out of bounds after that timeout, they threw it down low in the post, and Leah Summerfield did a great job of executing that foul we had to give, because that would have been a one-on-one post move down low, you know, and so she did a fantastic job of executing exactly the way they needed to get executed and fouling before it could be a shot and things like that. And then that resulted in the baseline of bounds play, and, you know, Shakia Graves just made an unbelievable read, made a great play, and got the steal. And you saw her get the steal, and you're thinking, all right, come on, just kick it in an extra gear. You're going to get down there. And then you're thinking, all right, is she going to miss the layup? Is she going to make it? You know, that was the longest 6 seconds I think I've ever experienced because there's so many thoughts going through my head. I'm like, are they going to get a tip from behind? Is it going to go off of her foot? Is she going to miss the layup? Do we have someone trailing if she does miss it to put it back in? You know, all those thoughts are going through your head. And to have her go up strong and finish and get fouled was really, 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 really good to see. And then, you know, I wanted to take everybody off the line just so there wasn't any kind of trick play or something to try to bait us into the lane and things. And she made the free throw, and, you know, we ended up getting out of there with a win. But, you know, Shakia just made a great, great play and anticipated that and got up and got it and finished a tough shot, a tough situation. And the thing that I was really impressed with her, too, was the poise she had because she dribbled it. And when she got across half court, I could see her look up at the clock. And so she knew enough to say, all right, how much time do I got? Yes, I can get to the rim. So she didn't panic. She played with poise. And I thought that was a really good sign, too, because a lot of kids just put their head down and maybe shoot it too quick, shoot it too early, or even too late. But she glanced at that clock dribbling across half court, knew exactly how much time she had left, and went in and made a great play.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to I'm going to walk the fans through those last couple of plays for sure. But you talked about, you know, going back to that inbound. And the thing about, too, is, you know, Coach Borseth will switch up defenses on you, too. And that would be another thing you have to go over, you know, in the timeout, is if they go to zone, if they do that, which they had done in the fourth quarter. They had mixed defenses on you and gone some zone. And so, you know, and I'd seen him even earlier in the game out of a timeout switch his defense on you guys. So, certainly there would have been a lot to go over, but, you know, you get the shot clock violated. And as you said, you know, you would wanted your team, you know, kids to try and put some pressure on them by going to the rim, and that's exactly what happened. There was just nobody ready to be aggressive, you know, in that possession. They kind of were just passing it around and looking, and there was just nobody – at least at that point, ready to be aggressive. So you get the shot clock violation. They obviously do, you know, take advantage of the new recent rules and call timeout, and so they're able to advance it up, you know, up into the forecourt, and 10 seconds are on the clock. And then here's where things get interesting, Coach, you know, before obviously, you know, the dramatic play of Graves steal on the baseline out of bounds in the Sioux. But I want to walk the fans through it. So they have an inbound in front of their bench. They throw it into the backcourt, you know, to get the entry in. And then they wind up dribbling. It takes 3 seconds, which, you know, they can – yeah, I know you guys, I think your assistant coach was contending that it took longer than 3 seconds. But they dribble it over to the other side of the floor and then call a timeout. So that was an interesting dynamic to me overall. And so then they basically have another side out on the other side of the floor with 7 seconds. And then here's what you were referencing. So they kind of spread the floor and have some action, but they get an isolation in the middle of the lane with Lindstrom, who we had talked about earlier, who's just an absolute stud offensively. And then your girl Summerfield, you know, pretty much on the point of the catch, you know, commits the foul that you had to give, which, as you said, you know, you guys had talked about it, and she executed well, because certainly at that point right there, Lindstrom is in business if she catches it and the foul's not committed.
Yeah, and, you know, I think part of that, too, with that timeout where they went from one side to the other, my guess is that that was probably her favorite side of the floor to catch it on the block.
Right,
so,
set up that play.
You know, so I figured they were probably dribbling it over there to set up that play to get her a chance to catch the ball on that block as opposed to the other block so she could, you know, maybe go over her left shoulder or whatever, things
right.
like that. So so I think that was probably by design to get that ball the other side of the floor. But, you know, it worked out in our advantage because, you know, without timeouts, you know, with Shakia making that free throw with 2.2 seconds to go, they didn't have a chance to advance the ball. So, you know, it definitely worked out in our favor. And thankfully we had that foul to give because that would have been a scary moment with a catch where she would have gotten it, whether we would have fouled or guarded. Again, Lee is a great defender. But with Lindstrom with the ball on the block one-on-one with the game on the line, that would have been an interesting thing that I'm glad we didn't have to see how it turned out.
And just, you know, a couple more thoughts on the end of the game. And fans, again, we're talking with Jeff Tungate, the head coach at Oakland, and I've been extremely unfair to him keeping him this long, but it was such an intriguing game, such a big game and a big win for him, and he's been such a great spot that here I am again being unfair to a coach and keeping him way too long. But Coach, I appreciate what you do, and I
appreciate being on the show, so I really appreciate what you do for the game too.
Well, thankfully you have the time today, because I got to tell you, I've loved it. I've loved talking about the team, the game. But here's the thing, and you referenced, you know, we're talking about, you know, some general basketball stuff, which is great too. But here's the thing too, you know, and you mentioned the foul to give, and you see it happening so much now across women's basketball with the new recent rules. And I don't think this part has been talked about enough, is that a lot of teams are getting caught in that situation now, because obviously with the fouls resetting, you know, with each quarter, whereas in the past you had the, you know, the one and ones at seven, you know, through the whole second half. And so when you're getting down at the stretch of either quarters and now at the end of games, you're getting a lot of teams that have fouls to give. And so now that, again, that whole pro dynamic of, you know, using fouls and team, that's why for me I've always been a huge free throw line guy and the art of drawing fouls and stuff. So to me, that you're not in these positions where the other team has fouls to give if you get into the end of games. But certainly that was a huge dynamic in this game, because as we both just referenced, Summerfield gives the foul on Lindstrom, you know, at the 7 second mark or whatever. So now to set it up, they have a baseline out of bounds on the left side of the basket. And again, you foreshadowed earlier, a few minutes earlier, that when you guys had the baseline out of bounds, that you were thinking that, you know, one of the reasons you didn't want to call timeout is because they could, you know, do a good job and you guys might throw it away. Well, talk about foreshadowing, Coach, because obviously they weren't worried about that enough, because, boom, the inbound play tries to go into a cutter in the lane and Graves just, you know, reads it perfectly and anticipates it and steps in front of it. And then, boy, it was a pick six type of play, because she had a full open lane ahead of her. And as you referenced earlier, there's about 6 seconds now at that time. So it's all about her not running in quicksand, getting how much, you know, can she get down the floor? As you referenced, she not only, you know, had the presence of mind to you know, look up and reference the clock as she's dribbling, but the other thing that was so great about the play is she actually smiled about half court as she's dribbling, you know, like a kid who stole a cookie from the cookie jar. And that was so cool to watch, especially on the replay. And then, you know, she's able to kind of, you know, switch sides of the lane as she's going in to get to the left-handed finish or to the left side of the rim. And, you know, they call the N1, which, you know, is refs tend to do. There was some anticipation. Or maybe you had a better view. I don't know if the girl actually fouled her or kind of swiped by her or not, but you get the N1 there. There's only about 2 seconds left, but just what an incredible finish. But, again, inbounds plays and just, you know, the danger of them at times, but just you know, kind of obviously a pass that Green Bay and that player will want back for the rest of their lives, but Graves read it the whole time and almost like Deion Sanders style just stepped in, had a little pick six there, Coach.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing with Shakia, she has worked really hard on developing her defense. She's never been known for her defensive abilities. That's putting it mildly. but she's really worked hard this year at becoming a better defender. And, you know, we've been able to guard, put her up against some really good players in our league because she's worked so hard at that part of her game. And I said to the team after the game, I said, I never dreamed a year ago when we brought you here that I'd be sitting in the locker room saying we won the game because of your defense. So she's really made a commitment to that end of the floor and really improved tremendously because, like I said, I at 47 years old, I think a year ago I probably could have guarded as well as she did. So she's really made a commitment to that end, and her hard work, I think, you know, I'm a big believer that you get what you deserve, and because she's made a commitment to that end, I think she deserved to get that steal and make that basket because she has committed herself to the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, and obviously the play they drew up, they didn't have the floor balance on the cut, so when she stole it, again, it was clear land, you know, in front of her. And here's the thing, as we know, as people have been around women's basketball a while, you know, women's players miss a lot of chippies. And so certainly that was no given. She's in, one of the blessings, too, she had a post player trying to chase her down. I think it might have been the Hibner kid. It was either Hibner or I'm pretty sure it was Hibner that, you know, was trying to chase her down. So she had a little bit of an advantage that way. But, again, that was not exactly an easy finish, especially considering the circumstances of knowing that the clock's running down and the stakes of the game basically being on the line. And we've certainly seen in women's basketball, you know, plenty of cold layups blown by kids, and actually both teams that had that through the course of 40 minutes. So, you know, again, just a tremendous steal, and then the capacity to finish the game, and then also the presence of mind and the poise to make the free throw, which is certainly, you know, is no small feat in that situation with everything going on, the environment, the, you know, the stakes and everything. So she completes that. And, again, that's going to be a highlight that might be in the Oakland women's basketball for maybe for the next 20 years because that was big time, Coach.
Yeah, no, that was a great play. And it was actually on the news channels here last night. And, you know, we don't really normally get coverage on the major network channels. And to have that shown during the sports highlights last night was great to see. And it was great for our program, great for recruiting, and something that, you know, definitely helps let people know that we've got a good brand of basketball here and people need to come out and see us.
Yeah, there's no question. That's what you really hope, you know, before I let you go, that's what you really hope also as a secondary benefit comes from games like that. And sometimes these big upsets is that it draws even more attention to certainly the other team and just to women's basketball overall, to the excitement of it. And that was an exciting game overall. You know, again, two definitely, you know, potent offensive teams going at and kind of going toe-to-toe. And then to have a finish like that, you know, was certainly tremendous. But there was, you know, a couple seconds left. And again, another intriguing move. They wound up bringing their best players out of the game. You know, with 2 seconds left, you think maybe they'll try for like a Christian Leitner play back against Kentucky, you know, trying to go full court. But they took Craker and, I believe, Lindstrom out of the game. And, you know, and then so they wind up, you know, inbounding it in the backcourt, got a couple dribbles, and obviously, you know, the half-court-ish type heave, you know, came up short and that kind of thing. But, you know, at that point, you know, your emotions and just the sigh of relief and, you know, just certainly had to make – were you able to sleep or not sleep well? I got to tell you, a guy like me after a game like that, and those kind of wins, I can't sleep. I'm watching the game a couple of times. I'm just wired to be able. So how did you fare the rest of the night? You know, either sleep or no sleep after a win like that.
Well, I think I ended up going to sleep probably about 3:30, to be honest with you. And I was up by about 6:30. So not a whole lot of sleep last night. But if I'm not sleeping for those reasons, I got no problem with that because after the Rice State game, I didn't sleep that night either. But that was for a whole different reason. So
yeah.
I don't mind missing sleep for games like that. But it was exciting, and you know, just the adrenaline of it, and to come down and then start preparing yourself for Milwaukee. Definitely a late night, but very, very, very well worth it.
Well, you mentioned, you know, preparing for Milwaukee, and certainly Coach Bill has not helped that enough because an unprecedented, basically 57 minutes here of a spot of you and I diving into your team and this game, and I got to tell you, it flew by for me. I just absolutely loved it. Loved talking with you about the team, about your kids, and about that terrific mid-major game and that huge upset over Wisconsin Green Bay. But can't thank you enough, Jeff, for coming on the day, such a big win. It's so great for women's basketball, and certainly for this podcast to have you on the day after to dive into it and break it down. But again, very unfair for me to keep you this long. But I guess subconsciously, knowing that you had time, I took advantage of you. So I owe you one, Coach.
No, Coach, I'm happy to spend the time with you. I really enjoyed it. And again, I can't thank you enough for all you do. And it's a pleasure to be on here with you.
Well, you made it a great spot. Again, not only just the insight, but, the personality of it and, just breaking it all down. Thank you so much. It really, really was a great spot. It was a great win for you guys. And honestly, it was a great game to watch. It was a true pleasure for the fourth quarters. And congratulations to that. But certainly as a former coach, I know now it's all about, moving this product forward and having a big February. So I certainly wish you that way. I'll certainly be following closely and, the next good or distinguished or win, we'll have to get you back on. But I promise, I know I say this to every coach, but I will promise it certainly will be nowhere near this long of a spot, I promise.
No, Coach, I'm happy to do it. Thanks. I look forward to be back on again soon.
All right, Jeff. Have a great rest of the day, and good luck against Milwaukee. I'll definitely be following it.
Thank you.
All right. All right, fans, this is Jeff Tungay. And again, as I just did, got on my knees to thank him for the amount of time that he gave us tonight. I mean, 57 minutes is ridiculous and, again, basically unfair by yours truly. But, again, he apparently had the time and seemed more than willing to talk about the game at length and his team. And just a great spot, though, again, to talk about such a terrific win over the number 21-ranked Green Bay, the number one team in the ESPN mid-major poll. And again, a team that had only lost two games coming in by a total of 5 points. One of them was at Notre Dame by 4 points. And then the other loss was a one-point loss at Wisconsin. And just a team who had been running through people. And again, as we referenced earlier, they had lost. And Green Bay had at their place beaten Oakland on January 13th, 89-47. But Oakland gets it done and led by Taylor Gleason, their guard, their transfer guard from Illinois. She had 20 points. And then you also had Hannah Little, their junior forward, this athletic rebounder who's averaging 12 rebounds a game, third in the country. She had a double-double. They had a big performance from the Dodd kid off the bench, the six-foot sniper guard. Not off the bench, she started, but in the third quarter, she had a big shooting quarter that was a boost. But Green Bay, to give you the numbers, Green Bay had been holding people to 49.5 points a game through the season, only 32% field goal percentage, and Oakland drops a 79 spot on them. And then again, also the Wild finish. The game's tied at 71, a couple of timeouts and inbounds, and then a baseline out of bounds and a steal by their backcourt kid Graves, a steal in the middle of the lane, and she basically has a pick six. She goes coast to coast with only 6 seconds left. She beats the buzzer to get a layup, gets fouled, makes the three-point play. There's a couple seconds put back on the clock, and then, a half-court heat type of play by Green Bay falls short, and so the huge 73-71 win for Oakland. But again, Coach Tungay coming on the day after, being such a great spot with his insight and his personality and then really breaking down the game for 57 minutes was just tremendous. Really, really enjoyed that spot with Coach Tungay talking about the game and his team. But just to quickly recap some of the – before I sign off, we're going to look to recap some of the other games that happened across the country real quick. But you had a big win at home for Texas A&M in the SEC. They beat Florida, and they go to 16-6, 6-3 overall, 84-76 home win. And they were led by 6'5 junior center Kalia Hillsman, 24 points. How about these? 18 rebounds for Kalia Hillsman, played 38 minutes. Terrific job by her. Congrats to her and the Aggies. 16-6, 6-3. Coach Blair continues to get it done. People weren't sure what they would do this year, losing a lot. But 16-6, 6-3 in a gauntlet of a conference like the SEC. Coach Blair just keeps getting it done down there in College Station. In mid-major style, you had Charlotte women's basketball under Coach Consuegra with a 72-66 road win at Florida Atlantic. They now go to 16-5, 8-2 in conference. So Charlotte women's basketball and the Cara Consuegra getting it done again this year. And they were led by 5'9 sophomore Grace Hunter,
26 points, 13 boards from the guard, 2 of 2 from the arc, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, 10 of 21. Again, 26 points, 13 boards from Grace Hunter leading Charlotte over Florida Atlantic. Mid-major style, and Dana, who spoke of Florida Atlantic, also in Florida Stetson with a road win, 65-49 over Jacksonville, who's a top team in that conference. And now Stetson 17-5, 6-1 in conference, and they were led by 6'3 junior post Sarah Segura, 15 points, 9 rebounds, 8 blocks from Sarah. So she 6 of 10 from the field, 3 of 4 from the free throw line. So Sarah Segura helps lead Stetson over Jacksonville in a huge road win in that conference. And again, they go to 17-5, 6-1 overall. Back to the SEC, you had Tennessee and the Lady Vols on the Holly War with the home win over LSU, 77-58. They go to 15-7, 6-3 overall in the SEC, and they were led by 6'2". Guard forward Jamie Narid, 26 points, 10 rebounds, 9 of 10 from the field, 7 of 8 from the free throw line, played all 40 minutes. So what an efficient, great game from Jamie Narid for Tennessee. Again, as they beat LSU 77-58, Narid averaging 16-7 on the year. If you remember, she had the huge free throws at the end of the game in the upset win at South Carolina just recently. All right, going back mid-major, IUPUI under Coach Parkinson with a 79-47 drubbing of Omaha. They go to 17-6, 7-3 in their conference, and they were led by 5'9 junior guard Danielle Lawrence, 21 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. Stat sheet stuffer Danielle Lawrence, 8 of 16 from the field, 3 of 7 from the three-point line. So IUPUI, 7-3 now in conference, 17-6 overall, 79-47 win over Omaha. Back to the SEC. Mississippi State and Coach Dick Schaefer just keep rolling along. 77-47 road win at Auburn. What an impressive win that is on the road to drub Auburn like that. So now Mississippi State 22-1, 8-1 in the SEC, number 5 team in the country, led by 6'1". Junior guard Victoria Vivens, their stars, 17 points, 6 rebounds, 6 of 16 from the field, 3 of 9 from the arc. So Mississippi State keeps it rolling over Auburn on the road. Going to the Big Ten, you had Iowa with a 71-57 win over Rutgers at home, 14-8 now overall, 5-4 in the Big Ten. They were led by 6'3 sophomore post Megan Gustafson, an impressive post player for them. 25 points, 12 rebounds, 10 of 13 from the field, 5 of 6 on the line. Megan Gustafson leading Iowa over Rutgers. Staying in the Big Ten, you had Maryland, 85-70 home win over Purdue, 22-1 now overall, 10-0 in the conference. They keep rolling along doing what they do in the Big Ten since joining the conference, basically going undefeated year in, year out. But they are number 3 in the country. They were led by, it seems like every night, 6'3 senior center Brianna Jones, another double-double, 17 points, 14 rebounds, 3 steals, 3 assists, 7 of 9 from the field, 3 of 3 from the free throw line. I believe she's still averaging about 19 points and 10 rebounds a game. So once again, Brianna Jones leading Maryland 85-70 over Purdue, 22-1, 10-0 in the Big Ten for Maryland. Going to the ACC, you had Virginia with a 1-point win at home over Georgia Tech. They go to 15-7, 4-5 in the ACC. They were led by 5'11 junior guard off the bench, Ja'Kira Brown. She had 12 points, 10 rebounds, 5 turnovers, but 4 of 8 from the field goal, from the field, 4 of 7 from the free throw line. So Ja'Kira Brown off the bench gives a double-double performance for Virginia and Coach Boyle as they take down Georgia Tech at home 65-64. Keeping it moving in the ACC, Syracuse with a 95-63 win over Pitt at home. They go to 16-7, 7-3 in conference, the number 24 ranked team in the country. 6'4 senior center Brianna Day with quite a night, 31 points, 14 boards, 12 of 15 from the field, 7 of 7 from the free throw line, and she's averaging 13-9 overall. So Brianna Day's 31 and 14 boards lead Syracuse 95-63 over Pitt. Staying in the ACC, Miami, the number 16 team in the country with a 79-56 road win at Wake. They go to 17-5, 6-4. Coach Katie Meyer and the
and the Lady Canes were led by 5'9 senior guard, two girls, but one of them was 5'9 senior guard, Adrian Motley, 16 points, 5 assists, 5 reads, 5 of 13 from the field, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, and they also had a big performance from 6'5", 6'6 senior guard, Jessica Thomas, 20 points, 4 assists, 4 steals, 8 of 20 from the field, 4 of 9 from the three-point line. So Miami, with the road win over Wake, go to 17-5, 6-4 in the ACC. You had Duke staying in the ACC with the 65-37 win over Clemson. They go to 19-4, 7-3 in the ACC, the number 15-ranked team in the country. They were led by 6'1 junior, redshirt junior, wing and two-guard Rebecca Greenwell. The Kentucky native had 21 points, 4 rebounds, 8 of 13 from the field, 2 of 4 from the three-point line, 3 of 3 from the free throw line. So Duke with a comfortable win over Clemson, 65-37. They go to 19-4, 7-3 in the ACC. And as I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, the big one of the other big upset besides Oakland and Coach Jeff Tungate, my guest today, and his win over Green Bay, the number 21 ranked team in the country. The other huge upset was the Wolfpack of NC State going on the road at Louisville, winning 72-70, and they go to 17-6 overall, 7-3 in the ACC. And, again, a huge road win. Not too many people going to Louisville and winning. NC State did that. They were led by 5'8 senior guard Maya Spencer, 22 points, 6 rebounds, 11 of 17 from the field. So, again, huge upset win for Coach Westmore and his girls over Louisville on the road. But, again, to reference, they had already beaten Notre Dame early this year when they were number one in the country, I believe, and they beat Notre Dame at home, and then they'd also beaten Florida State. So they're used to some big upset wins within the top 25. Speaking of Florida State, they had an 83-55 blowout road win against BC. They now go to 21-2, 9-1 in the ACC, the number 6 team in the country, led by 5'11 junior stud forward Shakayla Thomas, 21 points, 5 boards, 5 steals, 10 of 12 from the field. She's averaging 14 a game. But Florida State handles their business with a blowout win at BC. Now 21-2, 9-1 overall, Florida State. So the speaking of Notre Dame, they had a road win last night at Virginia Tech, 76-59 road win, and they were led by a couple of players. Just give me a second here, but starting off with Arike Ogunbowale, the 5'8 sophomore stud guard, and she had 16 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. And what I loved about this game is the 6 assists. Ogunbowale always been a stud scorer, 3-level, can post you up, big-time mid-range scorer, shooting at over 40% from 3 this year, and just a strong, sensational scoring guard. But now 6 assists in this game, and what a huge deal that be if she continues to mix in some playmaking with her, you know, offensive scoring prowess. But 16 and 10 rebounds, and also the 6 assists from Ogunbowale in that 76-59 win at Virginia Tech. But they also had a big performance off the bench from Catherine Westbell, who's been a starter for them until the last couple of games. She's had an ankle injury, but Coach McGraw went with the freshman Aaron Boley to start again. So Westbell comes off the bench, 15 points, 7 boards, 4 assists, 7 of 8 from the field. 6'2 junior Catherine Westbell has had a really good year for Notre Dame, and she again had a big performance last night in that road win over Virginia Tech. And speaking of the Aaron Boley, the freshman from Kentucky, the McDonald's All-American forward and one of my all-time favorite kids, but the 6'2 freshman had 7 points, 4 boards, 3 of 7 from the field in just 20 minutes last night for Notre Dame, and she's shooting 42% from the three-point line, the absolute sniper. What a dimension she brings as a forward with that absolutely pure shooting stroke from the three-point line. So Notre Dame with the road win over Virginia Tech. We certainly broke down at length with Coach Tungate, my guest for today, the huge upset win by Oakland in the Horizon over Green Bay, the number 21 ranked team in the country in the latest polls, and also the number one mid-major team in the country according to the ESPN mid-major poll. And again, they won 74-71 with a huge steal and pick six layup just before the buzzer to give them the win, and they were led by 5A junior guard Taylor Gleason, 20 points in 40 minutes, 7 of 12 from the field, 4 of 7 from the three-point line, and then they also got a huge performance from this 6'1 junior forward, Hannah Little, who in 38 minutes had 13 points, 11 rebounds. Again, she averages 12 rebounds a game, the number 3 rebounder in the country. She also had 6 assists, so impressive performance from those two ladies for sure. Earlier, you also had South Carolina with a road win at Kentucky. They've been hot of late. They went 75-63. They go to 19-2, 9-1, the number 4, 9-1 in the SEC, the number 4 team in the country. And they were led by Elena Coates and Asia Wilson. Elena Coates with 20 points and 18 rebounds, 8 of 9 from the field, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. She's averaging 11 rebounds per game. And then there are other stud forward and post play, Asia Wilson, the All-America caliber player, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 5 blocks, 8 of 14 from the field, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. So South Carolina and Dawn Staley bounced back from the very tough loss that they had recently, but they beat Kentucky on the road, and they go to 19-2, 9-1 in the SEC. So that was that. Mid-major, you had Stephen F. Austin with an 86-65 road win at Sam Houston. They go to 17-3 and 8-1. Terrific year so far for Stephen F. Austin women's basketball, led by 5'6 senior guard Brentney Branch, 25 points. She had 3 assists, 9 for 23 from the field, 7 for 16 from the three-point line. They also got a big performance from 5'6 senior guard Taylor Ross, 21 points, 9 assists, only 2 turnovers, 7 of 12 from the field, 6 of 7 from the free throw line. She did all that in just 28 minutes. So, again, Stephen F. Austin, 83-65 road win at Sam Houston. They go to 17-3, 8-1 in the South Line. So that pretty much does it, fans. So there's a recap of a bunch of the games across the country last night in a busy slate in women's college basketball. But, again, want to thank everybody for tuning in either live today or by the archive. Also, certainly want to once again thank Coach Jeff Tungate, the head coach at Oakland. He came on for an hour and 17 minutes spot. He had the time. He was all had a huge interest to dive into that game. But again, a little unfair of Coach Bill to keep him that long. But it was a great spot. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Flew by. Coach Jeff Tungate from Oakland coming on again. His huge win over Green Bay, the number 21 ranked team in the country, who had only had 2 losses coming in and by a total of 5 points, 1 to Notre Dame by 4 on the road, and then 1 at Wisconsin by a point on the road, and they've been drubbing people. And again, Green Bay, 18 straight years they have won the regular season title in the Horizon, just a dynamic powerhouse program in middle major level. Kevin Borseth back there again a few years in. He had been there for a while, went to Michigan for a few years, now been back for a few years and continuing getting it done there. But a huge win for Oakland. And as we talked about in the interview, that's now 4 out of the last 6 for Oakland over. So they are the one team that has Green Bay's number, including they swept the series last year. But we talked about they got drubbed in the earlier matchup this year at Green Bay. So for them to come back with this performance, well, it was just tremendous and a huge win for the program. But they're now 12-10 overall, 6-5 in the Horizon. So they have work to do to propel this win forward and to have a big February to move up in the Horizon League. But anyway, thanks again to Coach Tungate. He was a terrific spot and an unprecedented hour and 17-minute spot. So thank you for his time, his interest, and his sincerity. Terrific spot. But with no further delay, I'm going to look to sign off. Everybody, have a great rest of the day. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the women's basketball over the weekend. And I'll be back with you early next week here with the Replay Podcast. Coach Bill signing off from New York. Have a great day, great weekend. Take care, everybody. Be safe out there.